Hey everyone, welcome back to the Film Experience Podcast. Yes, we're back weekly. Sorry, it's been a long time. This is your host, Nathaniel R., and today I'm talking to Nick Davis from Nick's Flick Picks, and we'll be discussing The Handmaiden and Captain Fantastic and whatever else crosses our minds. Here we go.
I'm sorry you had such a terrible night.
Hello, everyone. what Nick's referring to is that last night I went to Heavenly Creatures on the big screen, which I hadn't seen on the big screen since 1994.
Aww. So, but with all these like bad personalities to withstand all night, and a movie that's kind of dull, and that's a lot to absorb.
It is, yeah. No, Melanie Lynskey was there, of course, and you'll know that we think highly of her. So Joe and Jason and I went together, and then we met her for drinks afterwards.
So is it part of a series they're doing?
They were debuting her new film, Rainbow Time, which I regret to inform I haven't seen yet. Uh-huh. And since they were, you know, so they could kill two birds with one stone, because they also have a series called Cherry Bomb, which is about, of course, young teenage girls.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, since they always have something repertory as well as new stuff, it was the perfect opportunity.
Awesome.
And it's, for those in the New York area, we finally have an Alamo Drafthouse. and so this is their, I think, second week or something. So they're, you know, it looks like they're already pretty popular, though, which is good. Anyway, so that was fun. And for
I'm just glad you made it through.
For those of you who haven't seen Heavenly Creatures in a long time, it is so worth watching again. It totally holds up, and it's just so good. It flies by. And Melanie handled the questions afterwards like a pro. Like, how do you feel when you think about how Kate Winslet's career went? Which, you know, she's never heard that question before.
She's never heard that question. And there's nothing, you know, even vaguely insulting about it.
No, but she answered very well.
She was such a goddess that she Skyped in and talked to my students about it once when I was teaching it. And at that point, she said she hadn't, like, seen it in several years. And my students expressed, like, there was some plot point I think she couldn't remember right away or something. And my students were like, I'm just surprised you haven't seen it recently. And she's like, is that what you guys think about actors that I'm home, like, let me pour another glass of wine here and watch Heavenly Creatures again. I'm just good in this. Oof. You know, like.
Yeah, that would be like us constantly rereading our old articles.
Well, I mean.
Which, it's not like I've never done it. It's just not a common occurrence.
I mean, it's better than Googling myself, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But she told a story I hadn't heard before about the scenes in Borovnia, the magical world that they invent, that the people in the sort of playing the claymation figures.
Yeah.
That she was constantly worried that they were suffocating because the suits were so hot. So every time they would yell cut, she'd be like, let's take the mask off, like panicking for all these extras playing the clay figures.
She is always thinking about somebody else. It's so great.
Yeah, so anyway, see Heavenly Creatures again, rent it or buy it or whatever, it's great. New movies. So when you hacked Isabel Huppert's emails recently, which was
felt like I gave something to the world there. Yeah.
One of the readers was like, "I hope Nick's still gonna do his 50s series." And for those who aren't familiar,
I saw that. I know, and I felt keen for that person. So I'll have to get on it, even as a now archival document, because I have the list. I just haven't posted it.
So for those who aren't familiar, Nick, when he hits 50 movies in any given year, he usually posts his. It's not halfway through the year, it's whenever you hit 50, but
it winds up usually being, actually the irony, well, one of them around this is that I got to 50 way faster this year than I ever have. It was like late June. I was like, this is great. I'm going to get to post these so early. Whatever.
Well, it seems like you, since becoming a tenured professor at Northwestern, it seems that you go in flurries where you see or constantly seeing something and then nothing. Like, is that your academic schedule?
That's true. It's the academic schedule, but it's also just festival cycles.
Mm. So I finally forced you to catch up with The Handmaiden.
Well, didn't it just come out? It just got to Chicago.
Well,
has it been in New York a while?
No, I was just impatient.
Oh, okay.
But I see that you didn't love it, which is sad for me, but...
And I saw that you did, so, like, let's talk about that.
I think we should probably backtrack a little bit and say that the very first Park Chan-wook movie I ever saw was with you.
Oh, right, on Old Boy, which I fell asleep during. On my futon. That's so weird. I fell asleep during The Handmaiden, which was not its fault. I just had, like, a super busy day and was trying to cram it into a bad window. But of all the filmmakers who's doing everything he can do to be like, you guys are awake. I'm doing 15 things up here at once. Maybe he overwhelms me.
Yeah, I don't know. But I just thought it was funny because we both did not like Old Boy.
Yeah.
Which everyone else said was, like, the greatest thing ever. And this is by far my favorite movie by him. You said that you admired its, say a little bit of what you thought first, since you've seen it very recently and I saw it a couple months ago.
I think, well, so with the exception for me, for Thirst, which I think you were reluctant about and I convinced you to watch and we both really liked that, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I just don't really enjoy watching his movies. Like, I don't really relate to them as beautiful, which a lot of people do, especially this one.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of beautiful stuff in it, but there's something about the particular quality of the cinematography that's partially, I think, whatever camera he's using. Like, it does always seem to be in this really intermediate zone between intensely digital and looking kind of cinematic, and I don't really love the look.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty extravagant. Like, there's a lot happening in his movies all the time visually, but I don't find that the images are actually helping me unpack the story all the time. And this one is so full of story points that can easily get confusing, and I think probably, I don't know how you felt, but part of the movie's mission is probably for them to be confusing for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
but I'm curious about that, because I mean, do visuals always need to help you unpack the story? Can't they be playing counterpoint?
They can, but even unpacking as counterpoint is great, but I just feel like I have two totally different sets of information in my mind, and one of them just seems kind of about showing off. And the other one is about unpacking this, like, pretty convoluted narrative.
Mm.
And, so I saw it with three friends who it had been my idea to go. They all liked it better than I did. I don't think anybody loved it, but they all liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And like, the more we talked about it and the more I kind of thought about all the things it was taking on, like, I did respect how ambitious it was. I just didn't really like being at it.
Mm-hmm.
So what about you?
Well,
why do you think you liked it so much better than his other ones?
First of all, the audacity of it really appealed to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked that it kept pulling the rug out from under me in terms of expectations, not just in the plot reveals, because it's very twisty,
yeah.
But also in the way of, like, what even genre it is.
Mm.
And I tend to like films that are refusing to stick to one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, I just found it really beautiful. So I'm really curious about what you said about not finding it beautiful. And also, I loved that it was, like, one of these movies that kept revisiting itself, but didn't ever bore me, because I tend to, like, I'm not one of these people who automatically is drawn to sort of, like, the Rashomon influence and style of movies that like to loop back in on themselves, because a lot of times I find, like, yes, you know, we did that in the 1950s and it was amazing, you know.
Yeah.
We don't have to do it all the time.
Or even, like, we did that half an hour ago. I totally understood that.
Right. But one of the things I liked about it here was that it, what to me was a reflection of the characters, because, you know, movies about people who are conning each other, you know, there's something about con artists that are, that shows, that that requires sort of like audacious confidence.
Mm.
And I felt that that was reflected in the filmmaking.
Uh-huh.
About like, yes, you don't know who I am, and haha, you know, here's another aspect, but it's still not going to be the full aspect. So I kind of liked the show-off quality of his movies. I found in this was so much more appropriate to this narrative than to the other films I've seen of his.
Okay.
Which is maybe why I was just so happy watching it, because it just felt like his style met the substance of this really well comparative to other things I've seen. Like, to me, Stoker was so show-offy that I could never engage with it. It just felt like it was, like, under glass or something.
Totally.
And the other one by him that I really love is Thirst, but for different reasons, you know.
How so?
Well, Thirst, I like its complete commitment to its madness, which I think, like, really disturbing madness, you know, like, whereas with Old Boy, which is sort of the same thing about, like, its brutality, but in Old Boy it felt very sort of, violence is so cool. Whereas in Thirst, like, the sort of brutality felt like a direct, like, implication of, like, how horrible it is when people can't control themselves. So it just felt, like, more moral in its amorality? I don't know.
Yeah, I can see that. And you would say that about this one, too?
Well, this one, I'm not sure morality is, like, the best way to look at it, because everybody's...
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody's, like, evil in a way. But I just... Yeah, I just thought it was so ballsy. And in so many, like, interesting ways. And you know, I am allergic to long movies. And I keep hearing people complain about with this, but, you know, it's not like I was checking my watch during this.
Yeah.
Although, you know, that's such a weird phrase, because who checks their watches anymore?
I do.
Do you wear a watch?
I do. I actually bought it when I first started going to Toronto, because I often actually like to check my watch during movies, because I like to have a sense of when something cool happens, like how long did the film wait to spring this on us, or you know, midpoint or whatever. But you know, you can't really do that anymore, because you light up a screen and ruin everything for everybody. So I bought a watch. Life changer. But yeah, there was a kind of, so two things about what you said. Like, there was a kind of gasp in my audience who seemed, I don't know, I guess I can't characterize the audience's reaction in general, because it seemed like the audience was mostly pretty behind this. Even though there were some folks who were clearly having a hard time with how extreme the movie got, and I don't think they had understood that was what they had bought a ticket to. And there was one person who, as soon as it was over, got on her phone and really angrily called somebody and said, "I can't believe you told me to see this. This was the worst movie I've ever seen."
During the movie?
No, as the credits were coming.
Oh, okay.
Just, like, immediately. But then most of the audience seemed really into it, but there was a gasp when just the caption that says part three came up. Like, I think
people thought it was over at that point.
Yes.
Yeah.
But wait, there was something else that you said that I wanted to go back to. Well, the moral part. So one thing that interested me in the discussion I had with my friends after was that there is a character in the movie who winds up bearing the real brunt of violence at the end.
Right.
And I don't think anybody has an easy time in this movie, but certainly somebody takes it in the teeth way more than others. And I don't know that they were saying this as a criticism, but they kind of were, especially because it really, I think it even came out of the fact that there was a part three, which people were a little surprised by and felt like so much of part three is devoted to really nailing this one person. Mm. And they weren't sure that the movie had put them in a place where that was who they wanted to see really suffer. Mm. And that even within the terms of the movie, they couldn't. And I felt oppositely. Like, I, not that I sit during movies being like, ooh, who do I want to see really suffer? But ask me.
I think Park Chan-wook would respect that if you did.
But, like, thinking about why the movie targets the person that it does was part of what made it interesting to me.
Are you talking about the count or the uncle?
The count.
Okay.
Wait. No, the uncle. Sorry. The imposter. The guy who, yeah.
That's the count. The uncle is the, is the guy who keeps the women. Wait, am I remembering the characters wrong? No. The count is the handsome, like, con artist guy.
He is. Okay. Yeah. So him.
Okay.
But just, like, what he's done to the person that punishes him the most is not what, you know, watching the movie you would say is the most egregious thing you've seen happen. But in the movie's mind, it might be the most egregious thing that you've seen happen. Like, I'm trying to be elliptical just because of spoilers, but...
Right, you don't want to have spoilers for this movie, which is why we're being so vague. Yeah. Although, if you have, I am super curious how this relates to the novel Fingersmith.
Yes.
Because I think I've seen some of the last adaptation of Fingersmith, but not the whole movie. I think it was a BBC thing. And I think I was super bored when I tried to watch it.
Uh-huh.
Which is strange, because it has, like, Sally Hawkins and other people in it. But, anyway, I don't remember, like, when watching this, it didn't connect to anything else I'd ever seen.
Uh-huh.
Even though I was sort of vaguely familiar with that, so I'm wondering how, if it's just the sort of absurd style of it that made mm-hmm. me disconnect from that, or if it's just, or if he really goes off on his own.
Yeah. Well, he seems like a off on his own kind of guy. It's just my hunch, but I have no idea. I haven't read it.
Okay. I thought you would, since you're so well read.
That's me. No, I'm always just in my house rewatching North Country for ridiculous.
You're already up to 2005. Wow, you're cranking through those years.
We are, man. I mean, I'm not rewatching every single movie as I get to it, but a lot of them. Anyway, so one thing that actually also helped me admire the movie was that just thinking about it, like, I think while watching it, it reminded me so much of his other movies and what I usually kind of admire but resist about them. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the movie, because of well, for a variety of cues, like thinking of it as an attempt to make an old Japanese pornographic novel mm-hmm. with all the weird structures that would mean, and sort of like freezing into tableaus that kind of are telling a story, but they're clearly intended just to generate those tableaus. And it gave me a different sense of what his project had been instead of just like doing his style. Mm. And that made it kind of more interesting to think about.
I have a feeling that I've only seen it once so far. I really want to see it again, but I have a feeling that it's going to be one of those movies that's interesting to revisit after some of his other movies as well.
Mm.
Like in the future.
Yeah. Does it make you watch more of his other ones?
See, I have such stark, you know, when I see his movies, I have such like stark responses in terms of loving or hating that I'm not sure about that.
Yeah,
because I don't really want to sit through something that I hate as much as Old Boy again.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe I should go back to the beginning and see.
With all your free time,
right?
During award season, especially, it would be a good time.
I mean, I would definitely like see. I mean, I'm definitely gonna see whatever he does next, you know. But yeah, I'm not sure about going back through the older ones.
And not to ask a stale question that neither of us is interested in, but did you like the actresses?
Oh yes, I wouldn't nominate anybody from it, so to speak. But I thought everybody was, you know, engaged with the material and good, you know. It's not really like a performance movie to me, in the way something like, if we're sticking with his, you know, filmography, in the way Thirst is, for example, which is totally a performance movie, even though it's also crazy. This was a lot more of like a director's movie to me. I mean, above anything else, except for maybe production design, which it definitely has a lot of.
Indeed it does. I actually find the performances kind of hard to evaluate too, because I think it's both so specific. You know, there's a kind of Korean aesthetic that, without being more immersed in it, I don't feel like I make great evaluations of it. But also his own style, even within a Korean context, seems so extreme. So like the actors, especially the women in this, sometimes have these incredibly, you know, hyperbolic fits of laughter all of a sudden, or really over the top indicating of emotion, and then in the next scene they're all about like extreme subtlety and close up or whatever. It's obviously like fulfilling something that the movie wants to be. I just don't know exactly how to judge it, I guess.
Yeah, that, I think that's fair. I can totally see where you're coming from in that. A lot of times when I see movies from like other countries, I think like as much as I would like to think, oh, I can totally evaluate this. I think there is something about seeing something from your own country and in your own language that helps you to process it more. Especially when it comes to acting, I think, because like all the things that we think about in English language movies, like, you know, register of their voices and, you know, all these things, it's like not something you can necessarily get through subtitles.
And even though I wouldn't want this to, you know, I think obviously neither of us wants this to like scare anybody off from seeing it, because there's so much to relate
Oh
here.
no, I loved it. I should reiterate. I loved it. Like, it's gonna be in my top 10.
But I even felt like one of the coolest things the movie does right off the bat is tell you that all the subtitles when somebody's speaking Japanese are going to be in yellow, and all the Korean is going to be in white, and that's not just Japanese characters and Korean characters, because there are all these reasons, both political and just personally perverse, why people keep speaking the language that's not the one they were born with. Sometimes even the same line, there will be single words that dip, you know, into the different language than the rest of the line is in. And so that was so cool to see, but you know, I can't imagine how completely intricate this movie is to somebody who speaks both languages and can gauge how the performers are acting when they're speaking the different languages.
Right, rather what and how often they're performing a line for the benefit of the other character.
Completely. And like the subtitles just help so much in terms of seeing when they're switching, but I'm guessing that these actors are working on much broader spectrums than that, right? Of like of fully embracing Koreanness, kind of modulated Koreanness, like reluctant Japanese-ness, like whatever.
Yes, I think if you were more well versed in both countries, even politically as well. I mean, it's a really complicated movie. I really want everyone to see it. There's so much to process about it. And I think it's, I mean, I know you felt a distance, you didn't feel a lot when watching it, but I think there's just so much worth, like, sort of absorbing from it. Like,
Agreed.
it is not boring. I just want to
It's not
reiterate to
boring.
people.
But then that was the thing. I often was kind of bored. Like there was a lot happening. Like there's a lot, sometimes there was just so much happening that I was a little bored, or when the movie would sort of slow down for something that really had to play out in painstaking It's not like it's ever slow, but like something will happen that's really pivotal. Mm-hmm. And so the camera and the other characters' gazes are really arrested by what's taking place. And this sometimes frenetic movie suddenly is showcasing something to you. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, you know, often if you're really into a movie, you're with the characters and you feel like everything is kind of condensing also, and your breath is sort of catching. And with this, I just often felt like I had not been relating to the movie in a way that made those pivots interesting to me. Or I didn't even learn as much from going back through this the multiple times you do from different perspectives as I hoped I would. Mm.
It's interesting when listening to your take on that. It's a little bit how I felt during Julieta, Almodovar's new one.
Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of that, but that makes total sense.
Which, you know, I liked, but it is totally not top-tier Almodovar for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we have very vastly different feelings about Almodovar, but I just... A lot of the things that it, I could tell it thought were like the big moments.
Uh-huh.
I was just like, and like I was more interested in the side moments or something.
Yeah. Or in just wanting to sleep with that guy. That was really distracting.
Or stare at the computer generated deer. Can we go
yeah.
back? Or the costumes. Can we go back to that thing where I couldn't tell if it was a dress or a bedsheet or, you know, or a towel?
Good for you. You had all these other thoughts. I was more like, if I have spent 2 hours with him, is that like a common law marriage to him? Is that possible? Like, I've been here a while and I've really paid him a lot of attention.
Almodovar really needs a male muse again. That guy will do.
Yeah. I'll sign that petition.
Oh, have you, while we're speaking of like foreign auteurs, have you seen The Salesman yet?
I have.
And?
I really liked it a lot.
Oh, good, good, good.
You?
I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
At first I was like, this is kind of, you know, dry, and I'm not sure I'm like getting it, but I just, by the end, I was so... I had this experience with his movies. Well, I shouldn't say his movies because I haven't seen all of them, but where the more I watch them, the more I can't imagine not having seen them and like knowing these characters and wrestling with these ideas. Like, it had a very similar effect on me as a Separation. And by the end, I just like was so in it.
Yeah,
that I just didn't even want it to end, even though I was so relieved when it did, because it's so painful.
Yeah.
I don't think it's as good as The Separation, but it is a great movie, I thought.
Really good. And another case, I guess, I hear they've postponed it, and it's coming out in January, so it
yeah,
won't technically
sounds
be
like,
it.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess like what we're saying with Park Chan-wook, like you would kind of imagine that if you liked one movie by this person, you would like all of them. And yet, I think both of us experienced the past as like trying to do something that his movies often do and just not paying off.
Yeah.
In the same way, or just feeling much more literal in the way that characters would be like, but there's one other thing you don't know. It's like, well, I don't know it because you haven't said it. Jesus. Like, you should have said it the last five fights. But so much more often, it does feel like he's so nimble at people showing more sides of themselves or revealing, you know, paradoxical agendas in ways that feel totally organic to the story that he's telling. And I totally agreed that this was good at that. Although, I guess having said that, one of the things that was really interesting to me about The Salesman versus The Separation is that I kind of expected a little more ambiguity to last longer about the kind of key pursuit that the main guy
yeah.
is engaged in.
Who did what to whom and what exactly was done.
Yes.
Yeah.
And in an earlier moment than I expected, that gets pretty personalized and in a way that the movie's not really inviting you to be confused about. And I read somebody say that for that reason they experienced the kind of last act of the movie as kind of a letdown because they felt like it went into the most blatant kind of standoff that it could have.
Mm.
And And I actually was really interested in, maybe especially because of what his movies are usually like, and giving you so many different competing loyalties to different characters whose agendas completely conflict with each other, mm-hmm. that it was interesting to me watching somebody kind of know that they had reached the end of their quest and there wasn't that much they were going to get out of it for a whole list of reasons.
Yeah, I felt the same way. Like, I thought it was riveting that the last act was not mysterious, other than what is it going to do to these people emotionally.
Mm. Yeah.
I was really, really into it. Although I have to admit that I don't remember, like, Death of a Salesman well at all, like, in terms of, like, Arthur Miller's oeuvre, like, I'm always, like, when I try to recall details, I can't, you know?
Yep.
Just because it's one of those plays that I never seek out productions of, or it doesn't really interest me that much. And to have it be the backdrop of this, like, I couldn't really process if that was adding to the movie or not.
I feel the same way about that play, and because of this ridiculous supporting actress trudge through, I had just watched it like a couple months ago, and there were things about, like, specifically the character who Willie Loman is sleeping with when he's on the road, that really seemed like they paid off in this, especially because one of the early scenes is like one of the only kind of full on rehearsal scenes you see is Willie with that kind of girl on the side.
Mm-hmm.
Who the movie dresses in a really distinctive color and keeps kind of singling out as important to itself, which in the play it doesn't really feel like she is. And as the salesman unfolds, you can see why that's a character that matters. So, yeah, I would for sure recommend... It didn't, like, make it a totally different movie or anything, but there were things that I would have missed.
Yeah, I mean, I'll have time, because if it comes out next year, it's planned. Yeah.
I could easily fall into that abyss that I know presses all your buttons, where it's suddenly like, wait, which year did this movie come out in? Fuck this movie. I don't want to deal with this movie. Right. Tell me what year you're coming out. Like,
I know. I always feel so petty about that, but it just gets me every time. It just makes me hate movies I otherwise don't hate.
Yeah.
I'm totally like that with Maps of the Stars. I'm like, fuck you. You can't pick a year.
That's funny. The one that I always think of with you is Spider. So I guess it's happened to Cronenberg a few times.
Oh, Spider. I mean, that's something that I want to hate because of that. I don't know what year I am, but I think Miranda Richardson is so genius in that I have to sort of... Whatever year she's in, I would nominate her for.
Yeah. So would she.
And she'd give herself the win, too.
Yeah, well, she's due.
For those of you who don't get that joke, back in the day, because Miranda Richardson is not in the conversation anymore, she was very outspoken about the fact that she deserved to win the Oscar.
Having waited 2 years
right?
since her first unrewarded nomination.
Right. It's her time.
Yeah. Which loops us all the way back to the beginning of this podcast, because obviously Heavenly Creatures should have won that Oscar, but, you know.
Heavenly Creatures. 1994 was a good year.
Especially if you weren't looking at what got nominated.
Right, exactly. That's like 1999, too.
Well, that's not fair, actually. I guess all the acting races were actually really good, except the one that we cared most about.
Oh, yeah, I don't even want to think about what happened with Best Actress that year.
Yeah, it's rough. But, yeah, otherwise, up and down. I was going to say up and down the ballot, because you can tell what I'm obsessed with this week, like all of us. But even down ballot, the nominating was pretty good that year.
Yeah. So what else have you seen recently? Did you see Doctor Strange?
No, but when I do, I want to think of it as Dr. Strange. Thank you for providing that to all of us.
I don't know why. My friend and I love to put accents on things where they don't belong. And and so we're immediately, like, since the moment we knew they were making the movie, because he loves superhero movies. Like,
is it Will?
Yeah. My best friend, Will. I mean, he's not on the blog, so none of you are like, who? He since the day one, like, he was like, well, as soon as you get an invite to Dr. Stranger, let me know. So when we text each other, we always add the accent and everything.
So it's not specifically about... But it is Benedict Cumberbatch's character, right, in Zoolander 2?
What do you mean? I never saw Zoolander 2.
I didn't either, but I thought I learned from the preview that he played a completely genderqueer model named Stranger.
Oh, I didn't even know that. So we were,
your joke has layers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, way to go, guys.
And we didn't even know.
Yep. No, I have not seen that yet. Did you like it?
It was, I want to see it again just because, like, I liked the trippy visuals. But okay. The story is so boring. It's like... It's like Iron Man. It's like watching Iron Man again. I was like, really? Like, I hate... Like, I liked a lot of parts of the movie, but Doctor Strange is so annoying. He's just Tony Stark again, only a surgeon instead of a weapons inventor.
Great. I've been wondering what he'd be like if he were a surgeon instead of a weapons inventor.
You know, he's arrogant and snarky, and then, you know, he has to learn to care about things other than himself. I was like, really? We have to do this again?
So since this is no surprise to you, the only thing that would make me go is that it's a Tilda Swinton movie. So should I go?
Yeah. She's okay. In a ton of it. She's a main character.
But, like, and good in
yeah,
it?
Yeah, well, she's good in it, yeah.
Okay.
If you can get past the sort of all the racial casting controversies.
Yeah, I feel like this was a challenge that the universe threw at us to have to, like, pick one, your politics or your Tilda-ness. You can only have one. Like, fuck, that's a Sophie's choice.
See, I just sort of accepted that I would have to go with the Tilda-ness because she is so often the disruptor of, like, these things, like, you know,
yeah.
Gender binaries
and yeah.
Otherness that I just sort of have to let her get away with this, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas I wouldn't necessarily with other. So what is on video that we've never discussed? Have you seen Captain Fantastic?
I really liked Captain Fantastic.
I did too.
I'm in the same boat with you, except insofar as not having rubbed up against him at a cocktail party. But you
know, well, I wish that were literally true. I think we accidentally touched shoulders while we were taking a photo, but that was about it.
Nobody has time for your accidentally.
I will say, though, that I was trying to finagle, like, an actual interview.
Uh-huh.
And I was just like, so I say to his publicist who was there, I was just like, well, hopefully I can get, you know, I know he's busy tonight or whatever, because it was like a party. But mm-hmm. Hopefully I can get, like, a sit down with him, because, you know, I'm one of my favorite actors, and I would love to, like, grill him about this. And then, so yeah. Vigo's there, and he's... I didn't realize he was listening to us because he was, like, uh-huh. Shaking people's hands. So he was like, let's sit down right now. So then he, like, directs me to this, like, booth. So we sat down for a minute. But because it was like that, I didn't have, like, a tape recorder, you know?
Oh, uh-huh.
So we talked a little bit, but I'm sort of frustrated that I didn't record it because he was great, you know?
Yeah.
He would totally talk about whatever I wanted to talk about.
I have seen him at TIFF give, like, extra good Q&A. Like, he really shines in those moments.
Yeah, and he, like, I just casually brought up Witness because I had watched it, you know, recently. And so then he had totally, you know, went off about that. You know, I said no to that, and my agent was like, no, you have to do this. And he's like, it's just one day, and I want to do this play. And so he shows up, but his agent convinced him to, you know, I think he was able to delay the play or something.
Okay.
And his agent convinced him to show up on set. And then when he got there and, you know, did the little thing, and Peter Weir, after the first day, was like, what are you doing for the next 6 weeks? And totally said, I'm going to have you, instead of just playing, like, one of the guys, I'm going to have you play, you know, Boris or Alexander Godunov's brother.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to be in a lot of scenes. And so, like, and so... That's how his movie career got started.
Oh.
So his agent convincing him, because he was like, I don't know, a movie?
You know? Yeah.
Which sounds so Vigo. Like,
totally. And totally Captain Fantastic, too.
Yeah, he just, like, doesn't care about, you know, the things that you're supposed to care about.
Yeah.
So,
That was another movie where I expected, I don't know why I'm saying another, because we haven't really talked about this, but that was definitely a movie where I felt like, oh, well, please preach to the choir, like, flatter the politics that I walked in here with, and it just refuses to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
And it even gets kind of more complicated as it goes, in terms of what you think the stakes of all this are. Mm-hmm.
So that's a hot one on DVD, and or wherever you...
Yeah.
It seems so weird to say DVD. Do people rent DVDs anymore? I don't know.
I do.
I do too, but...
You're being very polite.
No, I do too, but I know a lot of people... Like, I was in the elevator of my building recently, and I was holding a Netflix envelope.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody actually turned to me and said, they still do that?
Yeah. That's a really small pizza.
And I was like, yeah, how else are you going to see the things you want to see? I'm not waiting for them to decide to stream it. And they looked at me like I was an insane person. So, which, you know, maybe I am, but whatever.
I
everyone should be when it comes to movies.
Everyone should be.